Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 628, titled, It's Not Easy Being Green, Fascist Infiltration and Co-option of the Green Party. This program is being recorded on March 9th of the year 2008. As is the case with virtually every program now, it's really important to flesh out your understanding of this broadcast by utilizing the vast and growing amount of supplemental material available on the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com and linked websites, the For the Record supplemental website, the For the Record blog sphere, the written descriptions in the For the Record section, the audio files being maintained by sister station WFMU, and the vast amount of information which will flesh out your understanding of a lot of the topics I talk about. In particular, I think when I tackle a subject such as the one I'm going to be tackling this evening, an aspect of countercultural fascism, dealing with a fascist presence inside of the green milieu, even the Green Party itself to a certain extent, this is a subject which will certainly be surprising to most listeners, I think, and perhaps a little bit irritating to some, particularly those also within the green milieu or even Green Party. Do some research. Do dig into the files, so to speak, in order to get a greater perspective on what I'm talking about before you react, so to speak. Now, we're going to plunge right in. In the last program, For the Record 627, we looked at, among other things, at the Green Party milieu's support within the Federal Republic of Germany for, among other policies, the going native policy or foreign policy that was used to justify the breakup of Yugoslavia along the lines of what was done in World War II by the Third Reich. The idea of using a Völkisch, an ethnically and homeland-oriented and somewhat mystical philosophy to justify foreign policy and realpolitik is one that found a receptive, well, it was received well by elements within the Nazi Party that in fact maintained something of a green agenda. There were, as we're about to see, elements of the Nazi Party that implemented traditional green policies, but this was not to say that there were some good or redeeming features about the Nazi Party, because in turn the very real green policies that the Nazis pursued were in turn part of a mystical blood and soil concept that was used to justify not only military aggression, but ethnic cleansing and the Nazi extermination programs. The idea is that the soil has to be kept clean, and some of these evil interlocutors who take over the cities and turn everything to the world of big finance and pollute the air and mess up the soil and thereby ruin the nice, pure, Völkisch nation in which all of the blonde-haired little wunderkind frolic in the sun-drenched sheaves of wheat and so forth. Got to get rid of all those evil interlocutors. That's something of an oversimplification, but that's the way it plays out. You want to learn more about ecofascism? A very good book that goes into that is called, surprisingly enough, Ecofascism: Lessons from the German Experience. It was published in softcover by the AK Press and co-authored by two people who have experience both in the German and the American Green Party milieu, plural, Janet Beale and Peter Staudenmayer. And Ecofascism was published in 1995 in softcover by the AK Press. Now, ecofascism talks about the green wing of the Nazi Party and the blood and soil concept that they manifested. And one of the people who epitomized that was a German theoretician named Walter Daray. And in a section called Blood and Soil as Official Doctrine, they talk about the green wing of the Nazi Party. The unity of blood and soil must be restored, proclaimed Richard Walter Daray in 1930. This infamous phrase denoted a quasi-mystical connection between blood, the race or Volk, and soil, the land and the natural environment, specific to Germanic peoples and absent, for example, among Celts and Slavs. For the enthusiasts of Blut und Boden, the Jews especially were a rootless, wandering people incapable of any true relationship with the land. German blood, in other words, engendered an exclusive claim to the sacred German soil. While the term blood and soil, or going native, as I call it, had been circulating in folkish circles since at least the Wilhelmina era, it was De Rey who first popularized it as a slogan and then enshrined it as a guiding principle of Nazi thought. Harkening back to Arndt and Riehl, he envisioned a thoroughgoing ruralization of Germany and Europe, predicated on a revitalized yeoman peasantry in order to ensure racial health and ecological sustainability. A country man, a country boy can survive, as they say. Continuing. Richard Walter De Rey was one of the party's chief race theorists and was also instrumental in galvanizing peasant support for the Nazis during the critical period of the early 1930s. From 1933 until 1942, De Rey held the posts of Reich peasant leader and minister of agriculture. This was no minor fiefdom. The agriculture ministry had the fourth largest budget of all the myriad Nazi ministries, even well into the war. From this position, De Rey was able to lend vital support to various ecologically oriented initiatives. He played an essential part in unifying the nebulous proto-environmentalist tendencies in National Socialism. Quote, "It was De Rey who gave the ill-defined, anti-civilization, anti-liberal, anti-modern, and latent anti-urban sentiments of the Nazi elite a foundation in the agrarian mystique. And it seems as if De Rey had an immense influence on the ideology of National Socialism, as if he was able to articulate significantly more clearly than before the value system of an agrarian society contained in Nazi ideology and, above all, to legitimate this agrarian model and give Nazi policy a goal that was clearly oriented toward a far-reaching re-agrarianization." Unquote. This goal was not only quite consonant with imperialist expansion in the name of Lebensraum, it was in fact one of its primary justifications, even motivations. In language replete with the biologistic metaphors of organicism, De Rey declared, quote, "The concept of blood and soil gives us the moral right to take back as much land in the East as is necessary to establish a harmony between the body of our Volk and the geopolitical space," unquote. See, here is a mystical invoking of the blood and soil concept for the Drang nach Osten, the drive to the East, including all of the excesses of the Eastern Front in World War II. Continuing, more about De Rey and the green wing of the Nazi Party under Hitler. Aside from providing green camouflage for the colonization of Eastern Europe, De Rey worked to install environmentally sensitive principles as the very basis of the Third Reich's agricultural policy. Even in its most productive phases, these precepts remained emblematic of Nazi doctrine. When the Battle for Production, a scheme to boost the productivity of the agricultural sector, was proclaimed at the Second Reich Farmers' Congress in 1934, the very first point in the program read, "Keep the soil healthy," unquote. But De Rey's most important innovation was the introduction on a large scale of organic farming methods, significantly labeled as Lebensgesetzliche Landbauweise, or farming according to the laws of life. And by the way, forgive my butchering of that phrase. Continuing, the term points up yet again the natural order ideology which underlies, beginning again, the term points up yet again the natural order ideology which underlies so much reactionary ecological thought. The impetus for these unprecedented measures came from Rudolf Steiner's anthroposophy and its techniques of biodynamic cultivation. The campaign to institutionalize organic farming encompassed tens of thousands of small holdings and estates across Nazi Germany. It met with considerable resistance from other members of the Nazi hierarchy, above all Backe and Göring. But De Rey, with the help of Rudolf Hess and others, was able to sustain the policy until his forced resignation in 1942, an event which had little to do with his environmentalist leanings. And these efforts in no sense represented merely De Rey's personal predilections. As the standard history of Nazi agricultural policy points out, Hitler and Himmler, quote, were in complete sympathy with these ideas, unquote. Still, it was largely DeRay's influence on the Nazi apparatus which yielded in practice a level of government support for ecologically sound farming methods and land use planning unmatched by any state before or since. For these reasons, DeRay has sometimes been regarded as a forerunner of the contemporary green movement. His biographer, in fact, once referred to him as, quote, the father of the Greens, unquote. Her book Blood and Soil, undoubtedly the best single source on DeRay in either German or English, consistently downplays the virulently fascist elements in his thinking, portraying him instead as a misguided agrarian radical. This grave error in judgment indicates the powerfully disorienting pull of an ecological aura. DeRay's published writings alone, dating back to the early 20s, are enough to indict him as rabidly racist and a jingoist ideologue, particularly prone to a vulgar and hateful anti-Semitism. He spoke of Jews revealingly as weeds, unquote. His decade-long tenure as a loyal servant and moreover architect of the Nazi state demonstrates his dedication to Hitler's deranged cause. One account even claims that it was DeRay who convinced Himmler and Hitler of the necessity of exterminating the Jews and Slavs. The ecological aspects of his thought cannot, in sum, be separated from their thoroughly Nazi framework. Far from embodying the redeeming facets of National Socialism, DeRay represents the baleful specter of eco-fascism in power. And more about the legacy of the green wing of the Nazi Party. And by the way, I recommend for a better understanding of that the book Ecofascism. Also, two other books go into this to an extent. The book Dreamer of the Day by Kevin Coogan. And also a volume we're going to use later, The Beast Reawakens by Martin Lee. Of the misunderstanding of the green wing of the Nazi Party under Hitler, the NSDAP, and seeing their green policies as somehow a good element of the Nazi ideology, the authors here, Janet Beal and Peter Staudenmayer, point out rather how it was the going native concept, the blood and soil concept that underlay the green element of the Nazi Party that precisely characterized that ecological rationalization for extermination in order to gain Lebensraum, in order to get rid of the weeds who were polluting the true relationship of blood and soil of the people who belonged in their little homeland. And this, by the way, has been updated and expanded to show how other little peoples in their homelands need to get their rights too, which just happens to break up countries that Germany and the Underground Reich and those who ally with it want to break up. The next section of ecofascism that we're going to look at here is called Fascist Ecology in Context. And talking about how the green wing of the Nazi Party has been understood or misunderstood by contemporary Greens, and as we're going to see, some fascist elements that have attempted to and successfully infiltrated and even co-opted elements of the Green Party. In Fascist Ecology in Context, Beal and Staudenmayer write, to make this dismaying and discomforting analysis more palatable, it is tempting to draw precisely the wrong conclusion, namely, that even the most reprehensible political undertakings sometimes produce laudable results. But the real reason here is just the opposite. Speaking more of the green wing of the Nazi Party under Hitler, even the most laudable of causes can be perverted and instrumentalized in the service of criminal savagery. The green wing, unquote, of the NSDAP was not a group of innocents, confused and manipulated idealists or reformers from within. They were conscious promoters and executors of a vile program explicitly dedicated to inhuman racist violence, massive political repression, and worldwide military domination. Their ecological, unquote, involvements, far from offsetting these fundamental commitments, deepened and radicalized them. In the end, their configuration of environmental politics was directly and substantially responsible for organized mass murder. No aspect of the Nazi project can be properly understood without examining its implication in the Holocaust. Here, too, ecological arguments played a crucially malevolent role. Not only did the Green Wing refurbish the sanguine anti-Semitism of traditional reactionary ecology, it catalyzed a whole new outburst of lurid racist fantasies of organic inviolability and political revenge. The confluence of anti-humanist dogma with a fetishization of natural purity provided not merely a rationale, but an incentive for the Third Reich's most heinous crimes. Its insidious appeal unleashed murderous energies previously untapped. Finally, the displacement of any social analysis of environmental destruction in favor of mystical ecology served as an integral component in the preparation of the final solution. Quote, "To explain the destruction of the countryside and environmental damage without questioning the German people's bond to nature could only be done by not analyzing environmental damage in a societal context and by refusing to understand them as an expression of conflicting social interests. Had this been done, it would have led to criticism of National Socialism itself, since that was not immune to such forces. One solution was to associate such environmental problems with the destructive influence of other races," unquote. National Socialism could then be seen to strive for the elimination of other races in order to allow the German people's innate understanding and feeling of nature to assert itself, hence securing a harmonic life close to nature for the future," unquote. This, and the authors go on to comment, this is the true legacy of eco-fascism in power. Quote, "Genocide developed into a necessity under the cloak of environmental protection," unquote. The experience of the green wing of German fascism is a sobering reminder of the political volatility of ecology. And the authors go into great length about how some elements of the Green Party in Germany have been co-opted by neo-Nazi elements or have adopted some of the more insidious aspects of the green wing of the Nazi Party. Now, we're going to turn to a book I alluded to briefly earlier, a book called The Beast Reawakens. That was authored by Martin A. Lee. I've used this book many times in the past, and I've interviewed Martin Lee several times, and those interviews are available on the WFMU download website. You can also get them on CD from Spitfire. Turning to The Beast Reawakens, Martin Lee writes at considerable length about the Nazi infiltration of, a neo-Nazi infiltration of, and to a certain extent co-option of the German Green Party. Now, one of the things that I want to point out here, before we get into the pivotal role of veterans of the Third Reich in actually establishing the Green Party and its milieu in Germany, I want to point out that it was the Green Party and their opposition to NATO missiles and Reagan administration-spurred armament that helped to persuade, and it was the Green influence in Germany that helped to persuade Gorbachev and the Soviets to give the nod to German reunification. So basically the Green Party in Germany was something of a force for peace initially, in that it basically was seen by the Soviets and its influence was seen by the Soviets as a reason to justify, to give a nod to German reunification. Once that happened, several things happened. First of all of a sudden the Green Party, along the lines of what we looked at in For the Record 627, began advocating a going native philosophy, a blood and soil philosophy, which when applied to the Balkans was actually a philosophy for war, for justifying German hegemony, for justifying the blood and soil philosophy applied to the Catholic Croatians in Yugoslavia, for justifying a blood and soil policy applied to the Bosnian and Albanian Muslims in the former Yugoslavia. And the Peace Party, that was how the Greens were seen in order to rationalize Soviet, or in order to, they were seen as a justification by the Soviets to permit German reunification. Then it metamorphosed from a rationalization for German reunification to a rationalization for the fragmenting of Yugoslavia in conjunction with German foreign policy along the lines of the going native slash blood and soil philosophy. Oh, We must help the Croatians. We must help the Bosnians. We must help the Albanians. We must help them and their blood and their soil. And, of course, the U.S. and Britain and France, as Matthias Kunzel points out, were instrumental in helping to actually effect the armed conquest of the Serbs who opposed Kosovar independence. And that resulted in war crimes, but it was German authorship of the blood and soil / going native philosophy that precipitated that conflict. And remember that right after the German reunification, then again the Greens metamorphosed from the peace lever to the war lever, and they metamorphosed from the rationalization for justifying German reunification into supporting the rationalization for the fragmentation of Yugoslavia. And the Greens, as we're going to see, during this very same period, were being infiltrated by neo-Nazi elements, and it was in this period in which the Green Party metamorphosed from lever for peace and German reunification to lever for war and Yugoslavian fragmentation that Petra Kelly, the head of the German Green Party, was murdered. We're going to take a look at her murder in just a minute. But it was right in this period when the Green Party was metamorphosing from lever for peace and German reunification to lever for war and blood and soil / going native justification for Yugoslavian fragmentation that Petra Kelly was murdered. But turning to Martin Lee's The Beast Reawakens, what we're going to take a look at is the pivotal role of a guy named August Hausleiter, who was not only a veteran of the original German NSDAP, the German Nazi Party under Hitler, he was actually a veteran of Hitler's beer hall putsch. Turning to The Beast Reawakens by Martin Lee, the first organization to call itself the Greens in 1977 was led by August Hausleiter, a bull-necked, red-faced veteran of Hitler's beer hall putsch who had a long history of involvement in extreme right causes after World War II. During the early 1950s, August Hausleiter's Deutsche Gemeinschaft, or German community, collaborated with the neo-Nazi Bruderschaft, which counted Otto Skorzeny among its key personnel. By the way, the Bruderschaft, as you can read in The Beast Reawakens or in Martin Lee's The Dreamer of the Day, the Bruderschaft was a group of pro-SS Nazi officers in the immediate post-World War II German army. Otto Skorzeny was one of the leaders of the Odessa, the post-World War II SS underground, and also a key operative of the Galen spy milieu and the Underground Reich. Continuing with Martin Lee's footnote about August Hausleiter, again, a bull-necked, red-faced veteran of Hitler's beer hall putsch and a veteran of the Bruderschaft. Shortly after the Socialist Reich Party of Otto Ernst Rehmer was banned by the West German government, Hausleiter engaged in secret talks with Rehmer's colleagues in order to preserve the political punch of the SRP faithful. The SRP-linked attorney Rudolf Aschenauer was an executive board member of the Deutsche Gemeinschaft. By the late 1960s, however, Hausleiter had swung towards the left in an effort to attract student radicals. His group, Action Community of Independent Germans, began to focus on ecology and anti-nuclear issues. Hausleiter subsequently became a father figure for the fledgling Greens, whose initial supporters included dissident conservatives as well as left-wing activists. In 1980, Hausleiter was elected chairman of the Greens, but was forced to step down after a few months because of his checkered past. By the way, Otto Ernst Rehmer was one of the SS officers who directed the liquidation of the July 20th, 1944 conspirators against Hitler. Along with Otto Skorzeny, Otto Ernst Rehmer, one of the main operatives of the post-World War II Odessa SS underground. And August Hausleiter, at one point elected chairman of the Green Party in Germany, a veteran of this Odessa network. And very quickly, about the Nazi infiltration of the Green Party that was taking place at this time, Martin Lee writes, "The political cross-fertilization that ensued in West Germany around this time provided new opportunities for far-right strategists who were continually searching for ways to transcend their marginalized status. Toward this end, they sought to piggyback on the success of the Greens, which polled enough votes to enter the West German Bundestag, a feat that had not been accomplished by a radical right-wing party since 1949. Although most Greens were indisputably anti-fascist, some of them lacked the political savvy to realize that the neo-Nazis and other far-right miscreants had infiltrated their ranks from the outset. In 1980, the West Berlin chapter of the Greens, known as the Alternative List, expelled a contingent of national revolutionaries that had employed stealth tactics in an effort to take over the group. This was merely one skirmish in a battle for control of the Greens, as leftists feuded with brown elements inside the party. Left-wing forces ultimately prevailed, prompting eco-fascists and their fellow travelers to form a rival organization, the Democratic Ecology Party, headed by Herbert Gruhl in 1982. By the way, this is a very sanguine analysis by Martin Lee. I would suggest, rather, that some of the fascist elements within the Green Party escape detection and are continuing to wield a pivotal influence. Now, again, it was right in this period, in 1991, when the Green Party was metamorphosing from the justification, the pro-peace rationalization or justification for permitting, for the Soviets to permit German reunification, to the going native slash blood and soil ethnocentric pro-war rationalization for the fragmentation of Yugoslavia. And it was right in this period when the head of the Green Party, Petra Kelly, was murdered. And we're running out of time on this broadcast, but again, in the For the Record supplemental section, not only will the there be more text from the Martin Lee book published, but also this entire article from Mother Jones of January and February of 1993, an article by Mark Herzgard, Who Killed Petra Kelly? The official version, although some articles say that the German police never actually opened their files on the Petra Kelly murder, the official version was that she was murdered by her lover, Geert Bastian. Now, Geert Bastian was a former two-star general in the German army, although I have not been able to find the article, an earlier article that I read about the murder of Petra Kelly, supposedly killed by Geert Bastian, who also supposedly killed himself, was that Geert Bastian, as a young officer, was a member of the Bruderschaft, just like August Hausleiter. But in this Mark Herzgard article, Who Killed Petra Kelly, it has more to say about Geert Bastian. He had an odd history. In World War II, he fought for the Nazis, failed in private business after the war, and then went back into the military in 1956. He was a member of the CSU, the far-right party, until 1963, when he began a long political transformation that by the 1980s landed him with the Greens. He later resigned, protesting that they were being too soft on communists by just focusing on U.S. missiles. And that's the guy that supposedly gunned down Petra Kelly and then killed himself, although there are questions about the forensics, and there are also questions because, according to one article, the German police have never made their files public, or not all of their files public. So who killed Petra Kelly and why? Was it her Bruderschaft slash Nazi combatant lover? Who knows, folks? But anyway, as they say, it ain't easy being green. This wraps up For the Record program number 628. It ain't easy being green. Nazi infiltration and co-option of the Green Party. This is being recorded on March 9th of 2008. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.